Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Good morning. Happy Easter. Man, I'm so glad you're here with us this morning. If you're a guest today, that's one of the cool things about Easter, is that it's possible you haven't been to church in a while, or maybe this is your first time with us, and we're so honored you're here. Hope you make yourself at home today. I want to introduce myself. My name's Trey Kelly. I'm the lead pastor here. And man, we think you picked the perfect Sunday to join us. Not sure if you're aware, Easter's a really big deal to us. See, Easter is the culmination of everything we as Christians believe. See, not only do we believe in this man named Jesus, we believe that he was and is the Son of God. And we believe a little over 2,000 years ago on the other side of the planet, God came to earth and was born. We believe that Jesus lived a perfect life, which means he never once did anything God did not have planned for him. At the age of 33, at the end of a 3-year ministry, we believe the religious leaders and the civic leaders of the time conspired to have Jesus killed. We believe he died on a Friday afternoon, and he was buried in a borrowed tomb. As Christians, we believe his death was very significant because his death accomplished something for us. See, his father wanted to have a relationship with us. He wanted to love us. But we had rebelled against him, so we had sinned. We had brought sin into the world, and our God is a loving God, but he's also a just God. So sin had to be dealt with. But what we believe is rather than deal with it with us, he punished his son in our place. That's why he had to die. We believe he died. He was placed in a borrowed tomb, and on Saturday, we believe he stayed dead because that's what dead people do. But on Sunday morning, Easter Sunday, what we're all here gathered to celebrate, we believe he came back to life. And we don't mean his ideas. We don't mean his teachings. We don't even mean his spirit. We mean that his heart started beating again. He breathed again. He came back to life. He defeated death. He walked out of the grave, and he changed the world. I'll tell you that because I want you to understand the significance of why we're gathered here today. It is the resurrection of Jesus. In fact, I think it's fair to say everything that we believe as Christians, everything, it hinges on the fact that Jesus lived, he died, and he rose again. It's why we gather, it's why we sing, it's why we celebrate. So if you're going to pick one Sunday a year, this is the one. I get it. And here's what I want us to do today as a church, and if you're a guest, you're more than welcome to join in, and we're so glad you're here. I just want us to walk through the story of the resurrection. If you're like me, I grew up in church, and so I've heard this story many, many times. You may be vaguely familiar. You may know a lot. You may know a little. But there's just power in the story of what happened. And so if you are new and you were worried about what kind of sermon it was going to be today, everybody breathe easy. I'm just going to tell you a story. All right, we're going to have a great time today. And here's the thing I want you to do as I'm telling you the story. I really want to give you permission to find yourself in the story. If you're here today and you say you've been a Christ follower most of your life, as long as you can remember, you're going to find yourself in the story. If you're here today and you don't know anything about Easter, you don't know, you thought you're looking for the eggs and the bunny, you don't know what's going on. And if you're here today because someone has promised you ham afterwards, get that ham, enjoy it. But don't miss this, you're in the story as well. We're all in the Easter story. And one of the biggest reasons I want to tell the story is because the Easter story is a story of hope. And who on earth doesn't need hope? And as you saw on our billboard and as we sang, we believe hope has a name, and his name is Jesus. And the story of Easter is the story of Jesus. Because as we're going to see over and over today, I don't want you to miss this. Jesus chose the cross. He chose this. So as we go through the story, I want you to remember, not only to find yourself in it, but to remind yourself, and I'll remind you, Jesus chose this. And one of the questions we're going to wrestle with, and he's going to solve for us at the end, and this might be the most important question, is why did he choose the cross? Why did he do it? Have you ever thought about that? Why did he do this? The answer is far more personal and far more powerful than I think any of us can understand, which is why we're going to spend some time in the story. To tell you the story, I'm going to use four different documents as my source materials. Maybe you know this. There are four biographies we as Christians have in our New Testament about Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Maybe you know this. Matthew and John were disciples themselves. And so the accounts they write are eyewitness accounts of something they experienced. Mark was young while Jesus was in ministry, but we believe Mark was maybe a cousin of one of the disciples, a man named Simon Peter. And so Mark was either around or got his information from Simon Peter. And then Luke comes along, and he's a historian. And he just basically comes to Jerusalem and interviews as many eyewitnesses as he can to give us the details. And so as I tell you the story, we're going to hop back and forth between the different accounts, because it's like when you read any biography of a person, it can't cover everything. So you read multiple biographies, you get a clearer picture. That's why we have four biographies of Jesus, so we can get a rounded out picture of not only who he is, but what he did. So if you're ready, I'm going to invite you in your minds, come with me back to Jerusalem, a town on the other side of the planet 2,000 years ago. And we're going to start our story on a Thursday evening. If you're familiar with this timeline, we're going to start after Jesus has had a meal with his disciples. We call this the Last Supper. This is where Jesus does things like creates communion. This is where Jesus gives his disciples a new commandment to love like he loves. This is where we see Judas leave to go betray Jesus. So after this meal, Jesus takes the other 11 disciples and they go to one of his favorite places to hang out in Jerusalem. It's actually outside the gates of Jerusalem, and it's called the Garden of Gethsemane. And he goes there to pray. And he also goes there because he knows what's about to happen. He knows that Judas has left. He knows Judas has gone to get the priests and the temple guards, and he knows he's going to bring them back to the garden, and he's about to betray him. See, they wanted to arrest Jesus, but they couldn't do it during the day because they were afraid crowds would riot, and they didn't know where he would be at night. And that's where Judas came in. So that's the scene. Now we're going to zoom in on Jesus. He's in the garden. He knows what's coming. And Matthew tells us that he prays this prayer. He says, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." I love these details. I love the humanity of Jesus. Because for me at least, it's easy to remember he's fully God. It's sometimes harder for me to remember that he was also fully human. And this is his humanity. He's saying, "Hey, Dad, I know why we're here. I know what's coming, and I want what's best, but this is not going to be fun." He knew he was going to endure the physical pain, but I really think it was the spiritual pain he was afraid of. He had never been separated from his Father. And on the cross, as he bore the weight of our sin, his Father literally turned his back on him. And I think that's what Jesus was afraid of the most, was losing that connection. And so he just asks, he says, "Hey, Dad, this is really scary for me, but I don't want what I want. I want what you want. And if you say we got to do this, let's do it." So even in a moment of fear, Jesus chose the cross. He actually prays that prayer three times. It's like each time he gains a little more confidence. And that third time he gets up, looks at his disciples and says, come on, let's be going. Because Jesus knows what's happening. He knows Judas is about to arrive with the temple guards to arrest him. Judas had told them he'd give them a sign that he was going to kiss on the cheek the person who was Jesus. And so Judas arrives, he kisses Jesus on the cheek, and the guards immediately kind of swarm Jesus to arrest him. And Jesus doesn't fight back. He surrenders. And the disciples are confused by this because, you know, they didn't know what was coming. They still in their mind thought Jesus was going to be a military leader. And so they think this arrest is going to kind of force his hand. But Jesus just kind of surrenders to it. And so the hothead of the group, this guy named Simon Peter, who has this boldness in him, we come to find out was carrying a sword. And so he gets out his sword and starts swinging at the guards trying to fight back. This is a fisherman, by the way, not a soldier, but he starts swinging, and we're told that he chops the ear off of one of the aides to one of the priests. This poor kid is just out there at midnight with the priest said he had to go, and so he's there, and he gets his ear chopped off. It's just chaos. And then Jesus stops it. Jesus says, no more of this, and he touched the man's ear, and he healed him. Now, I don't want you to miss what just happened. Peter is wildly flinging about, and he chops this guy's ear off. Ear off. Guy holding ear on the ground. Jesus is about to be arrested. In the midst of being arrested, it's almost like you're handling your toddlers. You're like, no more. That's enough. Time out. You're done. Jesus goes over, picks the ear up, probably blows the dirt off of it. And puts the ear back on. I say this every time I teach this passage. If I'm there to arrest Jesus and I see him put someone's ear back on, I'm switching sides, guys. I'm going with the guy that puts ears back on. But that's not what happens. They continue to arrest. And then Jesus says this. He says, guys, put away your sword. See, those who use the sword will die by the sword. Here's what he's saying. He's saying, my kingdom does not take power by force. My kingdom takes power through sacrifice. You guys have missed it. Put down your swords. And then he says something factual. He goes, guys, don't you realize that I could ask my Father for thousands of angels to protect us and he would send them instantly? He's like, guys, all I got to say is two words. Take them. That's all I got to say. At any moment, Father, take them. Thousands of angels would show up and obliterate these people. Remember that as we continue the story. Remember that at any moment, all Jesus had to say was take them. And he doesn't. Because Jesus chose the cross. So he's arrested. He's taken to a home of a priest, and over the next few hours into early Friday morning, Jesus goes through three trials, and I say trials because they were basically just, they would gather more and more priests, and they would yell at Jesus, and they would curse him, and they would throw things at him. They slapped him in the face a few times. But it's become clearer and clearer that they want this guy killed. And they've actually decided, the Jewish High Council decides, this guy has to die. Most of the disciples didn't even follow Jesus as he was going through these trials. But Simon Peter, you remember the guy with the sword, he has kind of been tracking. He's out in a courtyard, but he's starting to get scared. This isn't the way things were supposed to go. Somebody in the crowd recognizes him. And they go, hey, I know you. You used to be with him, right? You're one of Jesus's guys. Peter says, no, I'm not. I don't know the man. Two more times. Three times total that night. Peter denies even knowing Jesus because he's scared. So Jesus is completely alone, abandoned. And he's choosing this. But early Friday morning, the Jewish High Council had decided Jesus needed to die, but they technically did not have the authority at that time in history to carry out executions. Because Jerusalem and much of that area at the time was under the control of the Roman Empire. And so their area was actually governed by a Roman official named Pontius Pilate. And he was the only one with the authority to carry out executions on behalf of the state. And so by early Friday morning, the Jewish leaders bring Jesus to Pilate. And they put him before Pontius Pilate, and they begin lying about Jesus again. They begin accusing Jesus. But this time they begin saying that Jesus is trying to stir up a rebellion, that he's telling his people to rebel against Rome, that he's telling his people not to pay Roman taxes. See, they were trying to manipulate Pontius Pilate because Pontius Pilate wasn't really interested in it. To him, it was a religious matter. He didn't really want to get involved. In fact, we see in the story, he tries to hand Jesus off to someone else. He sends Jesus to another official in Jerusalem, and that guy, oh, it's like hot potato. They're like, I don't want this, and he sends it back to Pontius Pilate. But Pilate has no interest in this at all, so the Jewish leaders kind of turn up the dial, and they say, well, boy, we would sure hate for it to get back to Rome that you let a guy who calls himself the king of the Jews and who is trying to stir up a rebellion, boy, Pilate, it would be bad for you if that got back to Rome, wouldn't it? And my mom, Pontius Pilate, is like, you guys are the worst. And so, in order to placate them, because he still doesn't understand what Jesus has done and deserves death, he says, okay, how about if I just have him beaten? And John tells us that Pilate had Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip. So what that means, it was a whip made out of leather. And there were little bits of lead tied at the end of each strap. And the reason that was, this is graphic, but I apologize. They would take the cloak off to expose the back before they did the whipping. And the hope was that every time they whipped, those lead tips would embed in the skin so that when the torturer would pull back again, it would rip. And so Jesus is beaten. And he has his back bloodied. Now remember, at this point, Jesus has been awake for at least 24 hours. He woke up early Thursday morning and everything has gone on all Friday. So he's been awake for at least 24 hours, maybe longer. He has nothing to eat, nothing to drink. He's been beaten. He's been mocked. And even though Pilate only ordered Jesus flogged, the Roman soldiers kind of took things into their own hands. And they added to the pain. Here's what John tells us. It says the soldiers, they actually wove a crown of thorns because they had heard him called the king of the Jews. So they start making fun of him. They weave a crown of thorns and they force it down on his head so that it stays and it pierces the skin and pierces his temples. They put a purple robe on him in mockery and they begin to say, "Hail, king of the Jews." And they slap him across the face. They spit on him. They laugh at him. So when he's brought back to Pilate, Pilate sees the state of Jesus, exhausted, puffy from the beating, covered in blood. And he puts him back before the crowd and he's like, look, guys, this is enough. Okay, I don't know what this guy did, but look, he's punished. Can we move on? And the religious leaders urged the crowd to begin screaming, crucify him. Crucify him. Crucify him. Pilate realizes there's stuff going on he doesn't understand. And so it's like he calls a timeout and he brings Jesus back into his inner chamber. And he begins trying to reason with Jesus. Like, hey, I don't know if you have gotten what's going on. These people want you killed. And I'm the guy who's going to make the call. So talk to me. Tell me what's really going on. And Jesus is pretty evasive. Jesus doesn't really respond. Jesus certainly isn't begging for his life. He's not answering the questions the way Pontius Pilate wants him to. And it kind of comes to a head. And Pilate kind of loses his temper. And here's what he says. He gets frustrated and he says, why don't you talk to me? He says, don't you realize that I have the power to release you or to crucify you. He's trying to get Jesus' attention, and he's like, buddy, I don't think you quite get what's going on here. I'm in charge. I'm the man. I'm the guy you talk to. I don't know if Pilate was doing that out of the goodness of his heart, or more than likely he was doing it out of ego. He wanted Jesus to beg. He wanted Jesus to grovel. Possibly he wanted Jesus to bribe him. So Pilate is standing over there with all this power saying, why don't you talk to me? And then Jesus says, if I'm just being honest, one of the coolest things that's ever been recorded. It's just so cool. It's like what the hero would say at the end of an action movie. Jesus looks at him and he says, Pilate, you would have no power over me at all unless it were given to you from above. He's like, Pilate, I don't think you understand what's happening here. See, you think I am just a footnote in the story of Pontius Pilate. And that when we tell the story of Pontius Pilate, there's going to be this day that he met this guy named Jesus. Pilate, I got bad news for you, dog. The story's not about you. The story's about me. And you're going to be in it, but you're going to be a footnote. Because everything happening here is so bigger and so much better and so higher than you and your power. Pilate, my friend, you are a tool of my Father. He is using you to accomplish his purpose. And it's like Jesus is saying, and Pilate, I don't want you to ever forget that. You have no power over me except what I allow you to have. And at that moment, Pilate fell on his knees and worshiped Jesus. No, he didn't. No. No. At that moment, Pilate said, okay, we're going to crucify you then. But for us, I don't want you to miss it still. Jesus had an opportunity. He had an out. And what did he do? He chose the cross. And Pilate obliges. He says, okay, we'll crucify you. And so that begins the action of Jesus being crucified. One of the punishments for crucifixion was that you had to carry the cross to the location where they were going to crucify you. At this time, they crucified people at a place called Golgotha. Technically translated, it means the skull. And so Jesus is ordered to carry his cross to Golgotha. Well, by this point, again, 30 hours he's been awake. He's exhausted. He's lost blood. He doesn't have the strength to do it. And so he can't carry his own cross. So a man named Simon is forced to carry it for him. But when they finally get to the place where Jesus is going to be crucified, what would have happened is he would have been stripped naked. He would have been laid down on the cross that was laying on the ground. And they would have used three nails. They would have nailed him here and here. I know on TV they always do it in the hands because that looks cooler. But that's not actually how it was done, because your entire body weight had to be supported by these nails. And it would just slip right through there. But if you did it between the wrist, there was enough bone and ligament to where it could support the weight. And so they would nail in this wrist, put the feet over each other, one through the feet. They then would raise the cross up while Jesus hung on it. And then if you see this, they'd scooch it over and drop it in the post hole they created. And so Jesus' body would have sagged. And then he would just hang there until he died. Normally from suffocation. Suffocation was the primary way people died from crucifixion. Because hanging this way, the only way to open up your lungs enough to get a complete full breath would be to push yourself up to find the space to breathe. But to push yourself up, you either had to use your feet, which had a nail through it, or your wrist, which had a nail through it. So the choice was excruciating pain or suffocation. Okay. That's what crucifixion brought to Jesus. That's what he was experiencing. Let me show you what he was thinking, what he was saying, what he was processing while he hung on the cross. Number one, watch this. He says, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. He prays for his executioners. He prays for his torturers. And he says, God, they don't understand what's going on. This is part of your plan. don't hold it against them. He's still caring about people. Maybe you know this part of the story. Jesus wasn't crucified alone. He was crucified between two criminals, two thieves. And those thieves have a part in this story. Luke tells us that one of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed at him. So you're the Messiah, are you? Well, prove it by saving yourself. And hey, us too while you're at it. Just real cocky, real arrogant, just mocking Jesus. The other criminal took a different approach. The other criminal protested, man, don't you fear God? Even when we're about to, like you get we're about to die, right? We're going to die. We're going to die. We don't know what comes next. This guy says he does. You weren't even interested? He says, we deserve to die for our crimes. But this guy hasn't done anything wrong. And then the criminal gets a little boldness. And he turns to Jesus. And he says, hey, Jesus, will you remember me when you come into your kingdom? Here's what the criminal's saying. He's like, hey, man, I don't deserve this at all. Clearly, look where I am. But I see the way you're behaving. And I see the way these few people who are with you, the way they're... And I think you're who you say you are. And I'm going to take my shot. If you're who you say you are, can I be on your team? Can I join your movement? Can I go wherever it is you're going next? And through the pain, literally having to pull himself up to speak, Jesus endures that pain to say this, I assure you that today you will be with me in paradise. Hanging on the cross, he cares for the criminal and invites him into his kingdom because the criminal believed. Shortly after this, John tells us it was around 3:00. Jesus finally looks up to the heavens and says these words, it is finished. And he bowed his head and released his spirit. It is finished. And here's the cool thing about the story. What was finished wasn't Jesus' life, because we know he's coming back to life. What was finished wasn't his mission, because we know it's going to keep going. What was finished was the penalty for sin, because it had been satisfied once for all time. There would never need to be another sacrifice, because Jesus' life was the perfect payment. So he's taken down from the cross. He's placed in a tomb. And his followers go home. They had to do it quickly because it was almost sundown on Friday. And at sundown Friday, the Jewish Sabbath began. And you couldn't work on the Sabbath. And so they hastily put him in the tomb and they go home and they wait. They know they won't be able to go back to the tomb until Sunday morning, because even though the Sabbath would end at sundown Saturday, it would be too dark to go back. And so they leave on Friday knowing they'll go back Sunday morning. And we know what happens on Sunday morning, but before we get there, I just want to pause for a minute. I don't know that we as Christians spend enough time thinking about Saturday. Thinking about how Mary, the mother of Jesus, must have felt on Saturday. Having believed he was the Son of God, her and his entire life, and having to watch as he died and believing it was over. I wonder how Peter felt, knowing that the last act Jesus saw before he died was a betrayal. I often wonder how all the disciples felt, the hopes dashed on Saturday, because they didn't know yet what was coming on Sunday. And I bring that up because I know it's possible in a room like this, there's many of us living in a Saturday. We've prayed. We've asked, we've begged, we've hoped, we believed. But we just don't see God moving. We don't know what he's doing. And if that's you today, I give you permission. Find yourself in this story. Because this story reminds us that even when we feel like it's Saturday, God's at work. And Sunday's coming. Put much more simply, if you believe that Jesus died and came back to life, You have permission to hope that everything's going to work out. Everything's going to be okay. Either here or in eternity. It's all going to be fine. And to me, that's the power of Easter. That's the power of hope. Is even when we're suffering, even when we're confused, even when we don't know what's going on, the story of Easter reminds us that God is always at work and he's always doing more than we could ask or imagine. So let's get to Sunday morning. The first group of people who arrive at the tomb were the women. Makes sense to me. A bunch of men had buried Jesus and the women were certain they hadn't done it right. And so they get there first thing Sunday morning because they want to tend to the body and make sure everything's okay. They get there. Stone's been rolled away. They immediately assume the worst. Even the angels are there and tell them, hey, he did what he told y'all he was going to do. He came back to life. They run. They go get the disciples. Peter and John hear about this. They come tearing to the cross. They go running. John gets to the tomb and stands outside. Peter, because he's Peter, goes running all the way into the tomb trying to figure out what's going on. They hear from angels, Jesus is alive, he's going to meet you in Galilee, go. So they leave. There's one person, Mary Magdalene, a longtime follower of Jesus, very close to Jesus. And it's as if the pain and the trauma of what she's endured over the last 24 to 48 hours hasn't gone away yet. And she's so distraught, she's so overwhelmed. She's so dissociated from what's going on. She's probably even dysregulated at this moment. She can't get herself together. She's just weeping because he's gone. He's gone. He's gone. And John tells us that she just continued to stand outside the tomb and she was crying. But then she stooped and looked in and she saw two white-robed angels, one sitting at the head and the other at the foot of the place where the body of Jesus had been lying. She looks in. She sees the angels, and they ask her a question. They say, well, dear woman, why are you crying? And she indignantly responds, because they've taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've put him. Like, are you serious? You're an angel. You don't know why I'm crying? Because he's gone. Somebody's taken his body. She doesn't even listen to them when they're saying, oh, no, no, he's alive. She can't even process it. Her world is so spinning. She's just so in her own head. She can't even hear what's happening. So she turns to leave. And when she turns to leave, she sees someone standing in the distance. And it was Jesus. But in her grief, in her pain, possibly because she was crying so hard, she didn't even recognize him. And then he speaks to her. He says, dear woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for? And by this point, Mary's about to lose it. So she looks back. John tells us she thought he was the gardener. And she says, sir, if you have taken him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will go and get him. It's like, I need answers, okay? I just need answers. The God of the universe, the person I've worshipped, I watched die. Now his body's missing. Somebody tell me what is going on. She can't process it. The truth is right in front of her. And she is just so stuck. In all her pain, she can't process what's happening. Have you ever felt that way? Like life is so heavy? Like things are so crazy? You just can't get your footing? That's Mary. That's where she is at this moment. And if you hear nothing else today, I don't want you to miss what turned it all around. It's what Jesus says next. Mary. He says, Mary. The way he had said it hundreds of times. He says her name. And she snaps back to reality. She recognizes her king. And she realizes everything he ever said is true. And she cries out, Rabboni, which is Hebrew for teacher. She says, it's you. I see you. And I can breathe again. I focus on that moment because it's one of the most relatable for me. See, I've been reminding you over and over and over that Jesus chose the cross. But I didn't tell you why. It's because I wanted you to see it. It's because I wanted you to experience it. See, Jesus chose the cross for one simple reason. It's because he knew your name. It's because he knew your story. It's because he knew the highs you'd walk through and the lows. And he could see the picture he had planned for your life. And on the cross, he declared your life was worth it. And today, he wants to be that God that you turn to in the chaos. And he wants to remind you that he knows your name. He knows you. He knows exactly who you are. If you're Peter and you feel like you've turned your back on him and denied him, he knows you. If you're Mary, the mother of Jesus, and you just feel so let down right now and you've tried so hard and breathed so hard, he knows you. He knows your name. And with Easter, he declared you were worth it. He knows your name, he knows your story, and he invites you to breathe and to rest in him, to know you are safe in his arms. He sees you. He hears you. And boy, does he love you. And so wherever you sit today with Jesus in the Easter story, I hope you leave here understanding that hope has a name. And it's Jesus. And Jesus knows your name. And Jesus came to earn the right to lead your story. And as we leave here today, we all have choices to make about how we're going to let him lead our story. For some of us, it's simply an act of obedience. Maybe it's believing we can come back to him. Maybe it's understanding that just like the criminal on the cross, there's nothing in our past that prevents us from the future God wants. Maybe we just need to be reminded that he knows our name, that he's with us, and we just need to be still and know that he's God. Or it's possible today that maybe for the first time, this story makes sense. You've heard it before. You knew it. But today you believe it. And I need you to know that has nothing to do with my storytelling abilities. Nothing. It has everything to do with the God of the universe using this opportunity to remind you that he knows your name. And that he planned today for you to hear this, so that you could make the greatest decision you've ever made in your life by choosing to place your faith in his son, so that you can be led by the same power that raises the dead. And so today, if you would say, yes, I want to place my faith in Jesus, I want to give you an opportunity to do that right now. So I just invite everyone in the room to bow their heads, close their eyes for just a moment. And if this is more than a story to you now, if you see Jesus as a savior, as someone you want to trust in, as someone you want to give permission to lead your life, then just, I'm going to pray a prayer out loud and you just repeat this prayer in your heart. Just say, Father, I need you in my life. I admit that I've tried to be the leader and I've done things my own way. I admit I've sinned and I have the scars to show it. But today I believe that you paid the price for my son. I believe, if I believe in you, Jesus, that I can have a relationship with the God of the universe. I believe that not only did you die, I believe you came back to life. And that fact gives me hope that you can accomplish whatever you want in my life. And so I commit my life to you. I make you my king, and I want to follow you forever. Now, I want you to keep your heads bowed and eyes closed, but I want you to know if you prayed that prayer with us, we believe something supernatural just happened. We believe you just entered into the kingdom of God. You're a part of his family. And as your church, it's our privilege to walk with you on that journey. And so we always ask people to do two things at this moment. First thing Jesus asks us to do when we become Christ followers is to go public. So we always like to give people the chance to go public, but in a pretty private way. So with heads bowed and eyes closed, I'm going to count to three. And if you just pray with me, I just want you to raise your hand and keep it up for as long as I tell you to keep it up. Just as your first step of reaching out to your new king. Ready? One, two, three, go. Just put them up and keep them up. Just put them up and keep them up. Again, you're just boldly declaring, Jesus is my king. I trust him. I believe in him. And I'll follow him. Just tell him you love him. Okay, you can put your hands down. And everybody look at me real quick. We're now about to enter a time of response as a church. We play a song and it gives people the chance to decide in their hearts what to do differently now that they've had an encounter with God. We'll have a prayer team down front. If you'd like to talk with someone, have someone pray over you. We'll have communion available in the vestibule so people will be moving around. But if you prayed with me a minute ago, you raised your hand, we want to meet you. We want to hear a little bit of your story, and we want to help you know how to continue to follow Jesus. And so here's all we ask. When we begin the response time and everyone's standing and people are moving, we're going to ask you to move as well. We're going to ask you to just simply step to the aisles, but you head to the back. And we'll have ushers back there who will guide you to a room we have. We've got volunteers who literally just want to have a 2 or 3 minute conversation with you just to get your information and to equip you with everything we have as a church to help you follow Jesus, because that's why we exist. And so if you made the decision to follow today, we'd love to know, because we'd love to help. Because for all of us, we're in the Easter story, and it's about all of us. And it gives all of us permission to hope that everything God has promised will come true. Because as long as Jesus walked out of the grave, we can be confident that in God's time, everything's going to be okay. So may we be people as we leave this place who not only know this story, who not only have received this story, but live with the confidence the story promises. That our King is good. He was so loving, he laid down his life. Our King is powerful, so powerful he can raise the dead. And our King knows the future. So we can choose daily to trust and to follow. Because he's always doing infinitely and abundantly more than we could ask or imagine. So as our show of gratitude this morning, let's respond to him. Let me pray. Father, we love you so much. God, we just thank you for your son. We thank you for his sacrifice. God, we thank you that he chose the cross. We thank you that he loved us enough to make it possible for us to have a relationship with you. And as we come to this moment of response, Father, I pray you move us to step. Step towards prayer. Step towards communion. Or Father, for those of us who have prayed for the very first time, step into community. I pray that anyone who became a Christ follower this morning will be bold and take a step so that your church can play its role in their life. We love you. We thank you, Father. We are so overwhelmed by your goodness. It's in your son's name we pray. Amen.